This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Saligny Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
Now the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
The 2-0 pitch. That swung on and it is hit out of here to right field. A home run opening the game for J.J. Weatherholt. That's the way to get started with the Cardinals going for a sweep in Pittsburgh on this Thursday.
Oh, and they got it, baby. That's right. A sweep in Pittsburgh. Four games. They took all of them. And now they're back home for a series that starts tonight against the Dodgers at Busch Stadium. Welcome into the Gas House Gang every weekday from noon until 1 o'clock. And I'm Chris Ranji with you. And with me is Matt Pauly today on the show. We also will talk to Katie Wu. You remember Katie. She covered
traitor.
The Cardinals. She is a traitor.
Yes.
The dude, you could not have said it better. Absolute traitor. She was a Cardinals athletic reporter. She left, and now she's covering the Dodgers. Well, they're back in town, so it serves her right.
They didn't even replace her.
Yeah, what the hell's that all about?
The world we live in today, Ron.
Let's talk to Katie about that and see maybe it's something she's done.
I mean, clearly it was her responsibility to find her replacement.
I don't know who else it would be.
I don't know.
So we played the highlight from J.J. Weatherholt, who got the Cardinals on the board right off the bat, and he is now homered in four of the last six games that he has played. So I know that he was going to be one of the focal points of the season, Matt, and that's because he's a guy with a lot of promise. We hyped him up quite a bit, and it wasn't because we just were pulling it out of thin air. I mean, this is a guy that people around baseball talked about, people who covered the sport and who cover amateur baseball. They knew that this dude is probably going to be somebody who's pretty special. And so far, I love what I'm seeing from him. The Cardinals have to be very, very happy with J.J. Weatherholt, because not only is he playing good defense, but now that bat is really starting to show up.
Yeah, he looks like he belongs, and I get the fact that he's, you know, basically 30 games into his career, and let's not put the cart in front of the horse, but this is what we talked about. This is what, and not to this degree, like anybody who said that it was going to be this, I think they're being disingenuous, but I think most of us had an idea that this was a guy who could be a really good big leaguer and a guy who was ready for the big leagues. That was the most important part. I spent so much worthless time leading into the season dealing with people who were convinced that the Cardinals were not going to have him on the opening day roster because they were going to try to futz around with service time, and that was never going to be a thing. He walked into spring training, and he was the starting second baseman immediately. And for him to do what he's doing, you mentioned his defense. His defense has been better than I think anybody expected it to be. He was getting on base even when he wasn't hitting. Now he's hitting. He's got an extra base hit streak of six games. The only guys who have done that with the Cardinals at seven games are Albert Pujols and Enos Slaughter. I mean, he's already doing. He tied the record for most consecutive games hit by pitch. This guy's 30 games in his career, Ranj, and he's setting or tying Cardinals records on like a weekly basis.
It's awesome to see. And it's awesome to see somebody who is a Cardinals rookie come in and do this immediately. It doesn't always work out like that. And I would venture to guess that there's going to be a point in time where maybe there's a trail off a bit. Maybe he comes back down to earth a little. But you know, I don't know offensively what he's going to look like by the end of the year. I don't think we're looking at an 850 plus OPS by him once we get to the end of September. Maybe, but my guess is probably not. I don't know if I need that, though. I just need the rookie to show that he belongs up here. And if he proves that, that's a success.
Yeah, I think the thing that makes me most optimistic that he's going to continue to contribute through 162 games is he wasn't hitting earlier, but he was still getting on base. His on-base percentage is .378.
Yeah, that's true.
His eye at the plate is just really good.
He does not chase. He's not the best in the game, but he's up there, man. He's one of the better ones. Yep.
So, yeah, he draws walks. So that's the if you're not hitting, if you go into a hitting slump, but you can still find a way to get on base by drawing walks, by occasionally being hit by a pitch like he does, that's how you mitigate bad streaks. So I don't think that's going anywhere. I don't think he's somebody that's all of a sudden going to start chasing because he's not hitting. He is very disciplined in the way he goes about things. I agree with you. The league is going to adjust to him. He's going to have to adjust back. The same thing that we've said about Jordan Walker. It's going to happen with J.J. Weatherholt. He's going to go into another period of time where the hits just are not coming from him, but I think he's still going to contribute and get on base during that time.
Yeah, and like you said, he's been getting on base since the very start of the season. And if you look at the advanced numbers, he does not chase bad pitches. He's really good with the strike zone. He does make pretty good contact. He doesn't strike out a ton, you know. So, I mean, those are traits of somebody who can keep something sustained for a while. It's just it's a matter of what the power is. I don't know if we're talking about a 4 home runs out of every 6 games kind of guy. I mean, that's not, you know, that's an otherworldly streak that he's on at the moment. But there's no reason for me to think that by the end of the year, he's not going to have a really solid offensive season if he stays healthy.
I'm going to be really curious to see what the power numbers look like at the end of the year, because coming into the year, you know, big time power isn't really been part of his repertoire. He'll hit home runs, but he's not like this 40 home run guy, or didn't project out to be. Well, he's on that pace right now. He's got 7 home runs through the first 30 games. When the season got started, I think a lot of us said, hey, you know what, if he's a 15 to 20 home run guy, well, then that's really
good. Huge win.
Yeah, well, now he's halfway to 15 right now, yeah. 30 games into the season. So do we change that? Do we say, well, is he a 30 home run guy? Do we say 25? Like, what does that end up being? And is power something that maybe comes along for him a little bit later? Because that is one of the things, Ron, we talked about this with Jordan Walker over and over and over and over. When you're talking about hitters developing, one of the last things that comes sometimes is the power. Are we seeing in front of us at the major league level Weatherholt's power tools start to develop all at the same time?
This is a really great question, because it took him about a month, a little more than a month, to get to 7. So, that, as you said, is halfway to 15. If for some reason we finish the year and he's only at 15, I think if you were predicting before the year started, and you were to say he's going to hit about 15 home runs this year, okay, I'd go, that's pretty good. I'll take that. Yeah. I'll take that from a rookie. I think, though, if you start the year with 7 right off the bat, and then you pick up like 2 a month the rest of the way, then I'll wonder what happened. I'll wonder, okay, why was he unable to produce for the remaining 5 months of the season? You know what I mean? I think then I would wonder about it, but I would have been happy with that number before the year started. It's more of a how he finishes from here on out kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think it goes along with what else is happening. If he's continuing to get, if he's putting the ball in the gap and getting a bunch of doubles, if he's getting on base, if he's doing all those other things, but the power starts to come back a little bit like we thought it was going to be this year, that's not going to worry me.
No, I would agree with that too. As long as you're getting extra base hits, you're getting on base, you're giving the guys behind you a chance to drive you in, then, you know, I think we should be happy with that with a leadoff hitter, especially a guy who is just playing in the big leagues for the first time and he's not 24 yet. I'd be very happy with that.
You know, that you mentioned getting on so other guys can drive him in. Right now, one of the biggest strengths of this team, Ronj, is those top 4 hitters and what they've been able to do. Weatherholt, Herrera, Burleson, and then Walker. That group, and you know, you're going to see some version of that group about every other inning coming through. When that group is giving you the chance to legitimately score runs just about every time they come up, that's a really big deal. I make this comparison all the time. When the Cardinals had Arenado and Goldschmidt, and they were really, really good, it felt like, because that when they had them, that's when I was covering the Brewers. So I was watching Cardinals games from a Brewers perspective. And when those guys came up to the plate, it felt like they were coming up every inning. And you were planning for that that group every inning, what you were going to do. Well, the Cardinals have a really good top of the order right now. And there's some other guys who have certainly contributed, not trying to take anything away from Gorman and Church and Wynn and those guys. But those top four guys in the order are giving you a chance to score runs seemingly every single time that group comes up. And if you are an opposing team, you have to be aware of that and kind of plan for it, because that's going to happen four or five times a game that group's going to come up.
What's really interesting about the Cardinals' offense is that they are right now a top 10 on-base percentage team, so they do a pretty good job of that. However, compared to a lot of other teams around the game, they're not always taking advantage of the opportunities. So yeah. I think they are, maybe bottom five or six in offense when there are runners in scoring position, which is crazy because they're scoring a decent amount of runs this year and they're getting on base quite a bit. So maybe it's because they are getting on base so much that there are just more opportunities to drive in runs, and they're taking advantage enough for it to matter. And maybe that starts to even out as the season goes on, but they're not always getting the big hit in the big moment. It just so happens that they're doing it enough right now.
Yeah, I mean their numbers with runners on, not great. Runners at first and second, 169 average. Runners at first and third, 161 average. They're good with the bases loaded. Runners in scoring position at 238 average, 674 OPS, so that's below. I mean, you can just go through all the situational type numbers, and it isn't especially good, so that gives you hope that it can even be better. At the same time, that's an area that they have struggled in recent years, so I don't think that's not one of those that I just feel like, oh, that's automatically going to get better as the season goes along, because we have seen them have a hard time with that before.
You know what, and just looking at the team right now, I don't know. I've been pretty consistent about talking about what I expect from them, what I will consider to be a successful 2026. And it isn't about wins and losses. It's not about making the playoffs, being a wild card or whatever. It really is about growth. It's about getting a very good, hard look at these young players, because they got a really young team. And nobody's over 30 on the starting lineup. Nobody's over 30. Nobody's even at 30 in the rotation. You know, this is a really young team right now. So it's just about that growth that they're going to experience this year. So with that being the case, I can't help but on a given night still getting into the game, which I love. I love that I am still worried about the win or the loss on any given night. Do you know what I mean?
Totally.
It's just, I love that. I love that I care about it each night.
And the more they win, the more the wins matter. And I've long said, Ronj, that best case scenario for the Cardinals, if everything goes right for them, then they're a team that's maybe contending for a wild card spot. That's best case scenario. Well, that's what's playing out right now. We talk about how great of a start this team has gone off to. They're 18-13. There's very little bad to say about this team from a big picture perspective. That being said, right now, if the season were to end, they would be in the final wild card spot. So what's happening is exactly what I've talked about. Best case scenario for this team, they play out of their minds. You're talking about a team that's probably going to be in one of those final wild card spots.
Matt Pauly, Chris Ronji on the Gas House Gang. We stream live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. Find the KMOX sports page, and you can watch the show. You can listen on the Odyssey app. If you happen to be watching on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter, you can leave a comment, and we'll try to get to some of those questions or comments that you have throughout the show. We will talk to Katie Wu from The Athletic at 12:30. Used to cover the Cardinals. Now she's on the Dodgers beat. She'll be with us. But it's Matt Pauly and I with you now here on the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
He has two hits today. Burleson lines it into right center. Base hit. That's going to score two more runs. On to third, Ivan Herrera. Have a day, Alec Burleson, with three more runs batted in. Adding to his total, it's up to 25 now. The Cardinals have a 9-4 lead.
You know, it is kind of nice to at least have one player in the lineup who's just a constant. You know, you just, hey, you know what Alec Burleson's going to give you. You know he's going to contribute. He has been contributing again this year. And that's been a, you know, I know that we've known about him for a while, and he's been here, and he's been a part of this lineup. But it's nice to just have a guy that you know you can count on. And you kind of, you don't even have to talk about him almost. And it's unfair to him, because we're spending so much time talking about Weatherholt and Walker and, you know, the McGreevy and Hunter Dobbins getting a start. And we're talking about all these other younger players, but we just kind of overlook him because we expect it. You know, we expect what Alec Burleson's going to do. And it's kind of nice to have that.
Yeah, it's. I think people forget he was a silver slugger last year. He had a plus 800 OPS last year.
Yeah.
He's got a plus 800 OPS this year. I love that. Yeah, he went through that little struggle against Seattle where he was 0-for-12 in the series, and then he was really frustrated with his at bats. He, that first game of the Pittsburgh series, he gets two hits, but neither of them leave the infield. One went like way foul and then came rolled back in, which was crazy. And the other one was, you know, just barely fair down the third baseline as well. And then that turned into a really solid weekend for him. And it finishes yesterday where he's a three-hit day. He's really good against Paul Skeens. The Cardinals have beat Skeens a lot. The Cardinals haven't had a ton of success against Skeens except for yesterday and one other appearance from Skeens. For the most part, Skeens has pitched well, just hasn't won. But Burley has really done a nice job against him.
Yeah, up until yesterday, the offensive numbers against him had not been all that great. He was good against them. I think he was the only one in the lineup, really, who had been. I think he was 6-for-17 or something going into the last night's game. But everybody else, or yesterday's game, not really that good. He just hadn't beaten the Cardinals yet. Skeens.
No,
hadn't.
It's kind of weird. And at what point does this get into his head? I don't know. There was one game he had against the Cardinals where he gave up 5 runs in April of last year. But outside of that, before yesterday, he had never given up more than 2 runs in a game against the Cardinals, yet he did not have a win.
That's pretty wild to think about. And wouldn't it be great? Because we talk about this with Clayton Kershaw and the Dodgers. Wouldn't it be great if Paul Skeens has a thing with the Cardinals?
Yeah, yeah, I love those things.
That's just the team that he can't beat, and he's pissed about it. Like, why can't I beat them?
He's finally going to beat them one day where he doesn't even pitch well, and that's going to be, like, the big story. He's going to beat the Cardinals at some point in time. He's Paul Skeens, but just the fact that this narrative is already developing that he has a hard time with them, that's kind of fun. And you look at the Cardinals and the Pirates, because Pirates have Skeens, Pirates have Connor Griffin, Cardinals have Weatherholt, they have Wynn. There's a lot of other guys on the way. It feels like there's going to be a lot of history between these two teams with a lot of their top tier players over the next few years.
We have been talking about Jordan Walker, who had trailed off a little bit here over the last couple of weeks. But now, Matt, if you look at his last 6 games, he's getting back up there again. The last 6 have been good for him. 300 average, 393 OBP, OPS at 828. He's got a home run during that stretch. So he's back on that board. He had gone several games without hitting a home run. So what have you seen from him in the last 5 or 6 games?
Yeah, easily could have 2 home runs. There was one that was right up against the wall and it was caught. So we could be talking about a guy with 2 home runs in his last 3 games or so. I just think this is the process for him, that he got off to the great start. The league was going to adjust to him. And what I was most concerned about at that point is that it just didn't completely go into the tank for Walker. And if it didn't go into the tank, that meant there were some things he was working on, some things that he was trying to get better. He's got 5 hits in his last 3 games. You went through the numbers. I don't have to go through them again. But he's not doing what he did early on in the season. He may not go through another stretch like that, especially with the number of home runs that he was hitting. But if he just continues to go out and give solid at-bats, make good swing decisions, and as long as he's not, you know, consistently going 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts, if he's continuing to put good swings on the ball, I think that's a good thing for him, and it all goes along with a year where there's just going to be a lot of teaching for him because the league is going to constantly be adjusting to him.
Cardinals tonight will hope to keep the win streak going. They are at 4 at the moment. They'll try to make it 5. It will be difficult because the Dodgers are in town. Probably the best offense in baseball or in the National League. It's either them or the Cubs. They're both really, really good offenses, and we'll see what the Cardinals have in store tonight. Dodgers are, as I mentioned, a very, very difficult team. Matt Pauly is with me. You want to hang out a little bit longer? You want to talk to Katie? Or do you want me to tell Katie that you want nothing to do with her?
I'll just sit here in silence as you talk.
And you know what? I will make it a point to tell her that you don't want to say a word to her because she's a traitor.
There you go.
Now, the Cardinals Conversation on KMOX. Sponsored by Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
The 2-1. There's a line drive, left field, right to Church. He makes the catch for a Redbird winner. Much easier catch than he made up against the wall last night on Nick Gonzalez's drive that almost got out of here. But Church made the play to end the game. The Cardinals have swept the Pirates, taking all four games. They won today 10-5.
And with that four-game winning streak, they will have the Dodgers tonight at Busch Stadium. 6:20 for the pregame show on 104.1 FM and the free Odyssey app. 7:15 will be the first pitch tonight, and we welcome in an old friend. Oh, look who it is. It's Matt Pauly and Chris Ranji, and we're joined by Katie Wu of The Athletic. As you might remember, used to cover the Cardinals until recently, until, as Matt Pauly says, became a traitor. And now she's covering the Dodgers. Hello, Katie.
Gentlemen, how are we on this beautiful day in downtown St. Louis?
Matt, tell her what you said.
Yeah, I called you a traitor. I mean, you're still my friend, but I called you a traitor. Is that okay?
Can you accept that? You can say it. I just appreciate that you said it to my face, Matt. It's fine. I get it. I hear it.
Katie, I've always believed that I take this approach to my radio postgame shows. I never say something about a player on the radio that I would not say to their face in the clubhouse. So I'll do the same thing with you. If I'm going to call you a traitor, I got to be able to do it right to you.
And that's why we're friends. All the respect. Okay.
All right, so Katie, this Dodgers team, I am stunned to find out they are one of the best teams in the National League right now. It just, I mean, they're so stacked, and the continuation from last year into this year, it seems like it's been a pretty smooth transition from 2025 to 26.
Yep, absolutely. And I know that this might cause some eyes to roll, but the Dodgers, despite being 20-11, would be the first to say that they don't think they're playing good baseball, especially offensively. Their rotation is stacked. I'm sure we'll get into that. But their top of the lineup, especially with runners in scoring position, has really lacked to start the year. They just dropped 2 of 3 at home to a scrappy Miami Marlins club. Don't get me wrong. All the respect to the Marlins. But when you have a top of your lineup that starts with Shohei Ohtani, Freddie Freeman, Teoscar Hernandez, and Kyle Tucker, you expect to win these games. So they were a little peeved after Wednesday's series loss. They know that their offense needs to get better, better collective at bats. They'll look to get right against this St. Louis team. I'm sure Cardinals fans certainly hope that won't be the case. But one thing that they know is that this is not a team to come into Busch Stadium and expect to roll over. These Cardinals, they can ball, and that's been exciting to watch from afar.
Yeah, Katie, you mentioned losing 2 of 3 to the Marlins. When things are just not quite right for the Dodgers, and I know you mentioned offensively, but what are the traits of those things when you can tell that the team isn't quite doing what they feel like they can do?
Yeah, it's a great question because you look at the names on the lineup and you're like, okay, yeah, these are all professional hitters, superstars, a team full of all-stars. They're going to be just fine. And To be fair, I don't think anyone is really necessarily worried about the overall offensive production of the Los Angeles Dodgers. They actually lead most offensive categories or are second in most offensive categories. They just had kind of a brutal stretch over the last 10 days with runners in scoring position. So you're looking for better quality in the approach. I feel like Dave Roberts said after Wednesday's game that some guys are still working on things mechanically. Kyle Tucker, for example, is one of those guys. Shohei Ohtani for a little bit, though he certainly looked to turn the corner as of late. Other guys are just kind of they just need a better approach. And when guys are searching, you can see that approach kind of go out the window. Teoscar Hernandez, I think, can be one of the most impactful bats later in the lineup that you can find in the National League. And his production has, you know, not really gone off to the way that he's wanted it to. Same with Freddie Freeman. He's moved up to the two hole with Kyle Tucker slumping. Dave Roberts moved him down to the cleanup spot. And the approach just kind of seems like they're not quite confident or not quite comfortable in the box and what they're looking for. This is a team that just played 13 straight. They took the off day here. They had the entire off day in Clayton on Thursday. And Freddie Freeman, I think, said it best. We just need a day off, recollect, regroup, and hopefully get back to business on Friday. So we'll see.
Looking at this rotation right now and seeing two guys with ERAs under two, there are an additional couple of guys with ERAs under three. So when you say the rotation is stacked, that seems like an understatement. We Cardinals will not see Ohtani this weekend, but at least on the mound, they won't see him. But that is... That's embarrassing. That's an embarrassment of riches to have four guys who are pitching like that.
Correct. And this is with Blake Snell on the injured list nearing a return, maybe 2 weeks away. The good news is Cardinals fans are missing Ohtani, Yamamoto, and Tyler Glasnow, who has also looked fantastic with those three. So you're essentially getting the B team, if you will, of the rotation. The bad news is the Dodgers B team is good enough to be at least the twos, if not some guys, the ones in some teams' rotation. So starting with Emmett Sheehan tonight, Roky Sasaki has been a little shaky. Justin Robleski has been phenomenal. He started as a six-man hybrid role, very similar to what the Cardinals did with Steven Matz, old friend, last year, and has pitched so well with his sub-1 ERA. I believe it's 0.69, actually, so that's nice. That he's going to maybe make a push to stay in the rotation. So I think the biggest difference in covering the Cardinals to covering the Dodgers is seeing what a team can do when they actually have ample starting pitching depth, and the Cardinals are working their way back in that regard. But it is an embarrassment of riches that your six-man hybrid starter can go throw a sub-1 ERA, and the Dodgers were just like, yeah, you know, we believe in him long-term, but this is where we need him for right now. We'll see what the future is. But I think that just goes to show, again, that where this organization is. They're back-to-back World Series champions for a reason. I think we're blowing up over the offense not being productive over the last week because that's where we are with the Dodgers. We fine-tune, nitpick all those things because that's really all they can do. They're not bad. They're very good, actually.
Katie, there was a little, I don't know if it was a dust-up, but there certainly was a little controversy when Cubs manager Craig Counsell took aim at the rule that allowed Ohtani basically to not count as a pitcher on the roster where the Dodgers get to essentially carry an extra guy. Were you surprised that that became a thing? Because that was one of the biggest narratives in baseball for a couple days.
I was surprised at the timing because I don't think this rule is, you know, brand new. It was very much in play when Ohtani was with the Angels. And, you know, the Cubs actually just left Dodger Stadium last homestand, and Craig Counsell fielded more questions on it. And it does sound like a little bit of a, like, I was answering a question previously, and this came up as part of my answer, and we all know social media. We all love social media. It kind of was blown out of proportion. And I do think there's an argument about the rule, but to say that this isn't just necessarily a Dodgers thing is not true. This rule was implemented for Ohtani when he was with the Angels. It was really implemented for two-way players, but there's one of them, obviously. And I hear what the Dodgers are saying. Shohei Ohtani's an exceptional player, so there needs to be an exception to the rules. I understand that. I think this is something where 29 other fan bases are going to hate it because they don't benefit from it. But if Shohei Ohtani was on the Cardinals, would anyone really be complaining about the rule here? No, I don't think so. So you have to make some concessions when you are a player that's doing something that no other player in the league is doing.
I think sometimes when we talk about fan bases of any sport, we kind of, I don't think we give enough credit for the idea that a lot of fan bases are really, really good, and there's not a ton of difference between each one, that a diehard Dodgers fan is just as diehard as a Cardinals diehard is. But would you say that there's what is a Dodgers fan like collectively? What could you say that there's anything different about them compared to what Cardinals fans are like or some of the other teams around baseball?
Oh, that's a good question. I think something that is really fun about your first year on a beat is you get to learn really the identity of a fan base. And it took me a while to feel the pulse of the best fans in baseball. Now, obviously, having spent 5 years with them and getting to know them as a group, I feel like I have a good pulse on them. I'm still figuring out what Dodgers fans really want. What I do know about them is that they are very much, just like Cardinals fans, have high expectations for their team. And of course, when you win back-to-back World Series champions and you spend a limitless amount of money to bring in every star that you possibly can, your expectations should be high. But I think the biggest difference is, and I think it's what fans are asked to understand. The Cardinals fans were asked for a very long time to understand the pain of watching players develop at the major league level. Dodgers fans are not being asked to do that because the Dodgers have superstars. They're in the middle of a dynasty run. You know, they're trying to become the first team in the National League to win 3 straight World Series, with the exception of one player. They want, and we'll see this on Saturday, Roky Sasaki, for all of his prestige, for his high ceiling, to figure out how to pitch in the major leagues. And I think Cardinals fans understand that concept because they've had to learn it the last couple of years, and they're learning it still now with guys like Kyle Leahy, et cetera. Dodgers fans have to figure out, why are we watching someone who is maybe not our best option in the rotation right now still going out there and potentially costing us games? Because Dodgers fans are conditioned to look at the short term right now, where Cardinals fans are conditioned to look at the long term. So I'm not saying either approach is right or wrong. It's just where each franchise is in their point in history. It's been interesting explaining this concept of developing in the big leagues to Dodgers fans. I actually had a fan sent me a tweet that I sent to a couple of Cardinals coaches of, I've never heard of a big league team asking its fans to watch a player develop in the major leagues. And I wanted to reply, let me introduce you to the St. Louis Cardinals.
Oh, wait, who are you speaking of?
Oh, that's funny. And Katie, with that, I get the sense that Cardinals fans this year are more accepting of what's going on than the last couple of years. And I point to just the fact that the direction has been more overtly stated than before. I know you still keep tabs on what's going on here. What are your views on just the direction of this organization now, and the fact that they're already having 1 month in the season but having some success at the big league level?
Oh yeah, I'm still in the Cardinals writers group chats, so I see it all, and I can understand why fans are excited about it, let alone because the play has been exceptionally better than I think the majority of us would have predicted. But I'm with you, Polly. Like, the way that this new front office has come in and clearly communicated its intents, what it's going to do and why, this is a smart fan base. It's a baseball city. And I've always said, if you just tell this fan base what you are doing and you are honest, they may not like it, but they will understand it. And that's something that I think the prior front office really missed the mark in, especially in the 24-25 seasons when they were kind of threading the needle of competing or not. Chaim Bloom went out and said, hey, straight up, I'm probably going to trade away some of your favorite players, and we're going to, you know, take some steps back. But here's why we need to do it, and here's how we're going to do it. And to his credit, he went out and did exactly what he said he was going to do. It helps, of course, that we're seeing very, very early returns. But this is a fan base that just wanted to be communicated with clearly, and they got that. And it's much easier for a fan base to rally around a ball club when they know the direction, and more importantly, they know why the direction is what it is. And most importantly, how this direction is going to help this team get on track in the future. It's early. I don't want to take away from the outstanding April this ball club has had. Certainly worth celebrating. There are going to be some lows along the process. But right now, this is just clearly a fan base that was tired of being stuck in the middle and was okay taking a step back if it meant at some point they were going to take steps forward. And this front office has done a really nice job of communicating that being the plan.
I'm really glad you said that, because I have been saying that since I moved back to St. Louis, you know, 9 years ago, that I do think this fan base, while there's an expectation of winning, because they had gotten used to that for 20 years, where they're always in the playoffs, they go to multiple World Series, they win multiple World Series. So there was this thought that we're always going to be competitive. It's always going to happen. We're never going to take a step back and rebuild. But I was saying, like, I think people would, they would get it. If you explain it to them and you tell them what's going to happen, I think Cardinals fans would be supportive.
And we're seeing it. We're seeing it right now. And if you think that those players are not encouraged by the steps that are taken, the freedom and the flexibility they have to go out and create that new culture, that new identity. They're the youngest team in baseball, and I think a lot of people saw that as a flaw. But knowing these guys in the clubhouse, knowing the kind of topsy-turvy circumstances that a lot of them had to go through going up and through the minor leagues, a depleted system in terms of staff and support, and then get here to the big leagues. And you think about guys like Mason Winn, Jordan Walker, Matthew Liberatore, Ivan Herrera, all guys with talent that were asked to kind of balance multiple roles as this organization was in purgatory, essentially. And now they have the flexibility to just go out there and play baseball with no expectations and get the opportunity that most players coming in will have. You're seeing them embrace this opportunity. You're seeing them embrace the chance to create a new identity of the next wave of Cardinals. And what they've done is they've found a way to play competitive, gritty baseball. I think Danny Wexelman has done a great job in calling them spunky. It's a very spunky baseball team. That's like the perfect word to describe them. I don't know if it's going to last. There are some underlying metrics that don't exactly point in that direction. They don't care, though, and that's the key. They don't care if they just got swept. They don't care what the metrics are saying or what the pundits are saying. They just care about going out there and playing baseball each day, and I think that goes a long way for a young club trying to find their identity.
Katie, do you miss us?
Oh, my gosh, of course.
Yeah,
of course. I'm so excited to go to the ballpark. I literally can see it right now from my hotel window calling me in.
Well, get over there. It's 1 o'clock almost. You need to get started.
Diet Coke night at the ballpark. It's like they knew I was coming.
That is right. It is Diet Coke. There's a theme ticket for a Diet Coke t-shirt, which looks pretty cool.
I will be sweet talking to Cardinals communication staff and helping me out with one of those.
Katie Wu, you're the best. Thank you.
Thank you.
You guys, so good to talk to you. I'll see you soon.
That's right. Katie Wu of The Athletic, and as Matt Pauley refers to her, a trader. She is our, what was the, I can't think of who was the number one trader? Why can I not think
Benedict
of his name?
Benedict Arnold.
Benedict Judas? Arnold, good Lord.
Oh. Judas.
What in the hell?
Judas is good.
There's two of them. There's two of them. I forgot about that one. Matt Pauley, Chris Ranji, Gas House Gang, just a little bit longer to go with you. We take you until 1 o'clock, and 6:20 pregame, 7:15 first pitch tonight. Cardinals and Dodgers on KMOX.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang.
Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Matt Pauley, Chris Ranji, just a couple more minutes to go before we pass it off to the Dave Glover Show. We are looking forward to Cardinals baseball tonight. 6:20 pregame, 7:15 first pitch. The Dodgers are in town. Hey, Matt Pauley, I see the news that Tink Hentz has been demoted from AAA. He's down now in the FCL. What do we know about what's going on with him? Because this is a guy, as you know, and I'm sure during post-game shows and Sports Open Line, people ask you about Tink Hentz and what's going on with him.
Yeah, so he's down in the complex league. So essentially what's happening is he's being sent to just work on things at the complex in Jupiter. And because he's on the 40-man roster, there are some things that need to be worked through in terms of where he can actually get sent down. His velo is way, way down. We're talking low 90s, and that's an issue. So they had basically redone all the mechanics on his delivery. And at times in spring, he looked awesome, Ranj, and at times in spring, he did not look awesome. And I think what we've seen so far this year is a lot more of the not so awesome. So I think this is a big deal. And the idea of Tink Hentz being a major league pitcher at some point, I think it takes a hit with the fact that this is going on. In Memphis this year, he had an 8.64 ERA in 8 appearances, and he was walking guys more than a walk per inning. He was giving up more than a hit per inning as well. It's just not going well for him, so they'll send him down to the complex, and they'll see if they can get him fixed, and time is starting to run out, I think, on Tink Hentz.
That's too bad, too, because that is a fascinating prospect. You know, the initial prospect of him really was interesting to a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, you don't grow on trees what he can do.
Right.
Unfortunately, he's not doing it right now. They moved him into the bullpen this year to try to keep him healthy because health has been an issue for him as well. I don't know. It's a really unfortunate thing because you dream of what he could be in the big leagues.
Matt Pauley, appreciate you hanging out with me today. And we'll be listening into Redbird Rush Hour at 5 and then you taking it up to the pregame show and then Cardinals baseball tonight. So thank you, buddy.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
That is Matt Pauley. He'll be with us on Monday, maybe. I don't know. We might have a change. We got the Billikens Golf Classic happening on Monday, so our whole schedule is going to get rearranged. We'll talk to the likes of Chris May, and we'll get the latest on Billikens Athletics from the Billiken Golf Classic. That's for the Chris and Amy show, by the way, on Monday. Have a great weekend. Enjoy Cardinals baseball if you're getting out to the ballpark tonight. And we will talk to you next week at 12 on Monday. It's the Gas House Gang. For Matt Pauley, I'm Chris Ranji. This is KMOX.